Blind Willie Johnson with John the Revelator. Welcome to the 21st century. Tonight we're going to explore the future. Tonight we're going to take you there. We're going to go there. We're going to take you a little higher. I'm reluctant to say we're going to take you to Electric Ladyland, but we might. So sit back and relax. Prepare to beam up.
Another world, intelligence had been born and was escaping from its planetary cradle. An ancient experiment was about to reach its climax. Those who had begun that experiment so long ago had not been men or even remotely human, but they were flesh and blood, and when they looked out across the deeps of space, they had felt awe and wonder and loneliness. As soon as they possessed the power, they set forth for the stars. In their explorations, they encountered life in many forms and watched the workings of evolution on 1,000 worlds. They saw how often the first faint sparks of intelligence flickered and died in the cosmic night. And because in all the galaxy they had found nothing more precious than mind, they encouraged its dawning everywhere. They became farmers in the fields of stars. They sowed, and sometimes they reaped. And sometimes, dispassionately, they had to weed. The great dinosaurs had long since perished, and the survey ship entered the solar system after a voyage that already lasted 1,000 years.
Comparable.
Falls briefly above the barriers of dying Mars, and presently the explorers saw the world swarm with life.
The years they studied directly at one.
When they had learned all that they could,
they tinkered with the destiny
of many species, on land and in the ocean. For which of their experiments would succeed, they could not know for at least a million years. They were patient, but they were not yet small. There were so much to do in this universe of 100 billion suns, in other worlds, four. So they set out once more to the abyss. No need to never come this way again. The servants that he left behind to do the rest.
So far, we've talked about alien abductions, and we're going to continue talking about abductions now with Gail Seymour. Hello, Gail.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. You're with the IRM, that stands for Implant Removal Method.
And that's what I call it. Mm-hmm.
I would assume at this point that that's an alien implant that somebody gets when they're abducted by a UFO.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, My background, in addition to being a business person, is that I used to teach healing. I was director of a big nonprofit down in San Diego. And in the process of teaching body work and working with doctors, my work evolved into counseling and working with UFO abductees. I didn't mean for it to do that, but it was kind of a natural progression. So about 5 years ago, I put all my other work aside and focused on this because it was needed and there aren't very many of us out there.
Is this a surgical technique you're speaking of?
No, I do this work basically over the telephone. It's almost like psychic healing. There are people who do surgically remove these implants. There aren't many of them. Mm-hmm.
We were talking a little while ago about a fellow named Dr. Lear.
Yeah, I've talked to Dr. Lear. I actually asked him to do a research project with me, and he's the only person I know that is surgically removing these.
Now, when you go through your process, does the alleged abductee actually have the implant or whatever in his or her hand as hard evidence?
No, and to tell you the truth, the reason I expanded the name of this service from implant removal method to implant removal and deactivation method is that I didn't have substantiation that it was actually removed, but I believe it's either removed or it's deactivated, its magnetic properties are deactivated.
Now, does that also include the possibility that somebody doesn't even have an implant? I mean, is there a possibility that some of the folks that call you?
Anything's possible in this day and age, but a lot of these folks do go to doctors and have x-rays and have these things fall out of their nose and have bumps on their head and on their feet. And most of the people that call me have physical symptoms and strange marks in their bodies and wake up with bruises, and you know the rest because you've talked to these guys.
Right. Now, what is the most compelling case that you've come across?
Well, the lady that's going to be on the show tonight has a very long history of abduction, and she'll tell you her story. Most people that call me have had abductions from the time they were very, very young, and most of the time it runs in families, and they will remember a relative talking about this or keeping it a secret. But this young lady has had a great deal of trauma because as she told her mother about the situation, her mother took her to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist proceeded to give her electroshock therapy.
Oh,
so you're looking at people who keep their mouth shut after a while because
sure.
They get in deep trouble.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk to your client, her name tonight is Anne,
mm-hmm.
Have you yourself had any experiences with UFOs or been abducted yourself?
If I told you I wasn't, it would just be that I don't recall it. Most people are hypnotized or otherwise made to forget their experiences. I do personally work with an ET group that people can see who are clairvoyant called the Arcturians, and a lot of us healers work with various groups that we have an affinity towards. So when I'm on TV, people say the stage lights up and it's blue. And when I work on people who are clairvoyant, that means they can see into the next dimension. They will describe these guys that I work with, and they all describe them the same way. So that's kind of an anomaly for me.
Now, earlier we were talking to Dr. David Jacobs,
mm-hmm.
and he has recently released a book called The Threat. Are you familiar with the...
I sure am. I'm the one that recommended he be on the show because I think his books are so outstanding.
Well, do you agree with him about this threat to mankind, that the aliens have some sort of subverted agenda that may be harmful to the human race?
Yeah, it sounds pretty dark and awful, but I think these beings know that we're stupid enough to blow ourselves up, ruin our planet, ruin our rainforest, and nuke ourselves to death, and they figure we're going to kill ourselves eventually, and they'll come back and repopulate the planet.
So
maybe it's already happened. Right?
Yeah, it's a sort of an urban renewal project on the planetary scale.
Well, Gail, let's talk to your client. Her name is Anne. Hello, Anne, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine.
And finally, the incident could have been a demonic encounter in which the natural and the supernatural... Bob Larson, please explain.
Well, I think the latter is what's happening in the majority of these cases. You know, even the late J. Allen Hynek, who was the world's foremost expert before he died, said that... he believed that these beings had an understanding of the connection between mind and matter, and that he thought there was something kind of extra-dimensional going on here. Jacques Vallée, who's the current foremost living expert on the subject of UFOs, a guy who had a bit part he didn't play, but somebody else did in the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, he has come to the conclusion that this is a spiritual phenomenon, that there's something going on here, that these beings aren't coming from out there. They're around here somewhere. They're just stepping in from a parallel dimension.
So do you think the devil is using aliens, or are the aliens actually demons, or is there a relationship between these visiting aliens and the father of all lies?
Yep, I think both is true. I think they are the devil's emissaries. I think they are really kind of setting things up for what Christians call the rapture, which is the time when Christians are going to be taken out of this world. And I think this is going to be the explanation. I think, I'm giving away a little bit of the end of the book, but I developed the theory a lot more deeply than that. I think that when all the Christians disappear and the devil's around to turn people over to the Antichrist, there may be an explanation for it. The explanation will be that those kooky Christians, these benevolent beings from beyond, finally got them out of the way so that they would no longer impede the moral progress of humanity.
A million silent worlds, few of which would ever speak. And now, out among the stars, evolution was driving toward new goals. The first explorers of Earth had long since come to the limits of flesh and blood. As soon as their machines were better than their bodies, it was time to move. First their brains, and then their thoughts alone, they transferred into shining new homes of metal and of plastic.
Captain's log, stardate 6134.6. The mysterious time slowdown we're experiencing has affected not only every crew member on board, but all the Enterprise's instruments and computer banks. It's as if time itself were winding down, and us with it.
Sensor readings confirm my hypothesis, Captain. The slowdown phenomena did not initiate until we came within 3 light years of that peculiar high-density energy field directly ahead.
Shut down all warp engines, Mr. Sulu. I want zero acceleration. Stand by on impulse power.
John wrote 5 books. He wrote the Gospel of John. He wrote 3 letters or epistles by his name, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and he wrote the book of Revelation. Now, the book of Revelation was actually written before he wrote the Gospel of John. He was put on the island of Patmos, which was then a deserted penal colony off the coast of Asia Minor, which is now Turkey, and he was put there to die. The Roman magistrate couldn't shut him up, and he didn't want to make him a martyr for fear that there would be even more followers that would be caused to believe. So he put him on this desert island to die, and it was there that he received the unveiling of this book called the Book of Revelation or the Apocalypse.
Now, when he saw the apocalypse, whether it was the vision or the dream or however it happened to him, he could have been looking at a television for all we know. He saw 7-headed monsters and 10-headed monsters and knights on horsemen, 4 horsemen of the apocalypse. Yeah, what are all those creatures?
Let me give you an example. Now, no other book is quite like the Book of Revelation. The way it was written, the way it was transmitted to him, it's all carefully explained. No other book does this so thoroughly. And he is commanded to write only what he was an eyewitness to, and it tells us that he was transported bodily and physically, up to what probably is going to turn out to be the beginning of the 21st century. And there he actually saw and heard the war that's going to take place in our near future.
Now, when he sees these monsters, these locusts, these ten-headed creatures that come out of the sea, is that the what his mind, oh, his ancient mind from 2,000 years ago, was he looking at like modern warfare technology?
You want me to give you an example?
Well, that would help.
Yeah, I think. Revelation chapter 9.
Open it up. We got the King James right here sitting in front of us.
Okay, I'm reading from the New International Version, but they're all close.
The King James sounds better. It's got more poetry in it.
Yeah.
Shakespeare wrote it, you know.
But I don't study out of any of them. I study out of the original Greek.
Really? You can read Greek?
Yeah, that was my major.
That's why you're Dr. Hal Lindsey.
Well, I didn't get a doctorate in that. It was later.
Is the Greek, other than the Dead Sea Scrolls, or the, I'm digressing here a little bit, but is Greek the oldest text we have? The Bible?
Well, you see, the New Testament was written in Greek, and the Old Testament was written in Hebrew.
Okay. We're digressing. Let's get on to Revelation chapter 9.
Okay. Let me read a passage from here. He talks about something he saw. It says, he keeps saying, I saw and I heard. Right in verse 7, it says, the locusts look like horses prepared for battle. Now notice he says, looked like. You see, here was a first century man who has somehow time traveled up to the 21st century, and he actually saw the incredible science and technology that is involved in that time. And then he was brought back and told to describe it. So how does the first century man describe something in the beginning of the 21st century?
So you think maybe he was looking at some black Huey helicopters or something like that?
Well, listen to this. So
okay.
He says the locusts look like horses prepared for battle. Okay, the outward shape looks like a locust. But it looked like horses prepared for battle. Well, in his day, the Romans used to drape armor over the horse.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then it says, on their heads they wore something like, now notice it's something like, crowns of gold. Now, a helicopter pilot wears these very intricate helmets. And so to him, it would have looked like a gold helmet. They're often painted gold. So it says, and their faces resemble human faces. Now, you see, this thing that looks like a locust, but it's got armor on it. It looks like it's got a crown of gold on it, and he says he sees human faces. All right, well, that would be the pilot looking through the windscreen.
Wow.
All right, then it says their hair was like women's hair. A helicopter, see, he didn't know anything about a fast whirling propeller or anything. A helicopter would have something that looked like a halo of hair, because he would see these the main rotor
controlling
spinning.
Force, and then brought him here from Saturn.
And its teeth was like
all the science and engineering skill of Earth seemed hopelessly primitive now against the powers that were carrying him to some unimaginable fate.
Like, you know, we have women,
he stared into the sky ahead, trying to pick out the goal towards which he was being taken, perhaps some planet circling this great sun. There was nothing that showed any visible disk or exceptional brightness. If there are planets orbiting here, he could not distinguish them from the stellar background. Then he noticed that something strange was happening on the very edge of this sun's crimson disk. A white glow had appeared there and was rapidly waxing in brilliance. He wondered if he was seeing one of those sudden eruptions or flares that trouble most stars from time to time.
The helicopter, they were everywhere, and they sound, when you hear that engine, right over you.
And in comparison. It was almost, Bowman told himself, smiling at the absurdity of the thought.
And so I think he's making a pretty good first century description of a 21st century helicopter.
We're
above
speaking
the burning
of Hal
horizon,
Lindsey,
no larger
on
than
the end
star.
Of the world. Now,
it's
Mr.
So
Lindsey,
that the eye could not bear to look at
him.
We're going to hell. We're going to hell was the name of an evil, nefarious computer in an old science fiction movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was, they did that off of IBM. They just took
I know, they weren't naming it after you, were they?
No, they just took the alphabet one step further.
IBM, HAL, we know that already.
Backward, okay.
Well, anyway, okay, so we're going to have a
apparition in its sky. That pinpoint of incandescence must be a white dwarf, one of those strange, fierce little stars, no larger than the Earth, yet containing a million times its mass. Such ill-matched stellar couples were not uncommon, but Moman had never dreamed that one day he would see such a pair with his own eyes. The white dwarf had transited almost half the disk of its companion. It must take only minutes to make its complete orbit, when Bowman was at last certain that he too was moving. Ahead of him, one of the stars was becoming rapidly brighter and was beginning to drift against its background. It must be some small, close body, perhaps the world towards which he was traveling. It was upon him with unexpected speed, and he saw that it was not a world at all. A dully gleaming cobweb or latticework of metal, hundreds of miles in extent, grew out of nowhere until it filled the sky. Scattered across its continent-wide surface were structures that must have been as large as cities, but which appeared to be machines. Around many of these were assembled scores of smaller objects, ranged in neat rows and columns. Bowman had passed several such groups before he realized that they were fleets of spaceships. He was flying over a gigantic orbital parking lot.
The story is told of a farmer who took great pride in his farm, so much that he painted his barns blue and white. He ate off of blue and white dishes, and he drove a blue and white car. The people in the community got the mistaken impression that he was rich, so they put this note under his door. "Dear sir, unless you put $500 under the old apple tree in the orchard, we're going to kidnap your wife." Well, he knew he didn't have $500, but he penned this note, to whom it may concern. "I do not have $500, but I'm interested in your proposition." Story is told also, I remember, of a little girl who was standing by the door of her mother's bedroom. And the doctor was visiting the mother, and the mother was extremely ill, and the doctor was saying to the husband, "Sir, I don't think your wife, is going to live. In fact, she will probably die when the leaves begin to fall." Little girl went running out of the house, and the father went running after her. The father finally found her under a tree, and he said, "Darling, why are you crying?" She said, "Daddy, I'm tying the leaves to the tree so that mother won't die."
To Venus? When are we going to quit sending people around the Earth? We've done that. We need to send somebody to Venus.
Yeah, well, I sent people to the moon.
I think it would be really cool. I mean, to go to the surface of Venus would be pretty tough. You'd have to design a really good suit because it's 900 degrees there. The surface pressure is almost 100 times what it is on Earth.
So how could we do that? That would be one hell of a spacesuit.
Yeah, it would be. But actually, there's another thing you can do, which is send people, you know, into the clouds of Venus.
Like they'd never land?
Well, you could land, but as far as a place where we would be comfortable, I think it would be kind of neat to go ballooning in the clouds, because there's a level in the clouds that is pretty much room temperature and pressure, and all you would need would be basically like a good rubber suit or something that would protect you from the acid clouds. The clouds are made out of sulfuric acid, so you'd want something to protect you from that, but it's not all that hot up there.
It would be kind of like that floating city in the sun that Billy Dee Williams was hanging out in that Star Wars movie.
Exactly,
then.
Yeah, you could,
that's cool.
You could make a floating city in the clouds of Venus. And,
how expensive
would
that
be? Vote. How expensive would it be? Yeah,
trillions and trillions or what?
Yeah, you know, I've never even been concrete enough about the idea to actually calculate a price tag.
Starts,
it wouldn't be cheap.
You and can start a new tax.
Thing, it's not the kind of thing that you could, you
and
know,
the international communist conspiracy
for, but just
to saffron and purify
about the human future and exploration and what we might do. It's a fun thing to think about. But it's certainly, you know, it would be an extravagant thing to start doing right now before we start on Earth. But
David Grinspoon, we're going to attempt to take another call here on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
All right.
As I said, the hotline is open at 961-8900. Hello, TJ.
Yeah. All right, this question's for the doctor.
TJ, you have to turn your radio off immediately.
That was cool. Okay,
wow,
what's going on?
All right, I was reading the newspaper, like, I think it might have been, like, 5 months ago or something, and it was talking about these scientists who did this on, like, global warming and stuff, and they said that, like, I was like, it was maybe a 10-year study or something, and they said that Earth was actually getting colder by a little bit.
Afternoon.
Millsap.
I'm, like, hearing everywhere.
Dump
like,
that guy.
Okay, off. Cool, let's get rid of it, okay. Did you hear about that study, Dr. Grinspoon, that the Earth is getting colder?
Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot more studies that the Earth is getting warmer, but the interesting thing is that we're not totally sure because the Earth is a really, really complex system. There's no doubt that if we keep pumping CO2 in the atmosphere, it's going to get warmer. But the fact that there are these different studies that don't all agree at present is just another illustration of how hard it is to do climate modeling and how complicated the Earth is. See, because there's all these feedbacks. You change one thing and it changes 100 other things.
Speaking
so
of feedback.
Like a simple thing to model. Yeah. And that's why it's really valuable for us. And predict the future of the Earth.
So does that burn your butt every time there's a cold day in July and you hear the Rush Limbaugh right wing environment hatist come on the air and say, well, there goes your global warming theory. Ha, 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 look, it's 55 in July. Ha, 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 ha. Where's
exactly,
your global warming at now?
You know, I mean, it's kind of on a day-to-day basis, you know, no matter how smart we get, we're never going to be able to predict the weather.
In thanksgiving, we repeat thy praise. You are all beautiful, O Mary. You are the joy. You are the honor.
In sports, it's the Reds and the Tigers in a charity benefit game, the Kid Glove Game, tonight at 7 o'clock out at Riverfront Stadium.
In the American League, Boston 1.5 up on Detroit, while Milwaukee...
Fluoridation of water.
Yes, I have that in that bag, yes.
Well, do you know what it is? Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
Wait, I don't understand something, USA. Is the Premier threatening to explode this if our planes carry out their attack?
No, sir. It is not a thing a sane man would do. The Doomsday Machine is designed to trigger itself automatically.
But surely you can disarm it somehow.
No, it is designed to explode if any attempt is ever...
This is absolute madness, Ambassador. Why should you build such a thing?
There were those of us who fought against it, but in the end we could not keep up with the expense involved in the arms race. The space.
Baseball fanatics, another date for you to remember, May 6, 1982.
Of course, the term werewolf, its origin is in the language of the ancient Romans. In Latin, vir, V-I-R, originally pronounced weir, means man, and so literally, man-wolf, werewolf.
Because in a time when so many people are being laid off, there's a great deal of insecurity built into, geez, will I be the next one? However, in the course of the season,
$53 million in damages from the league, while the Raiders have sought $160 million.
And a very nice little church, and we thought, well, we'll worship with them. We were complete strangers. And the children went to their Sunday school classes, and Mrs. Nell and I went to our Sunday school class, and we went to the 11 o'clock service.
Looking for a special or unique nut in your family?
Billie Holiday and her rise from the ghettos to stardom.
A colored singer with a white band. You must want to keep playing, no play.
Did you know that Budget Car and Truck Rental sells cars too? Budget sells quality rental cars every day, direct to you, the customer.
Nobody gives me any credit for anything.
Put on your bowling shoes and hurry over to your nearby Ohio Lottery
agent. We all moved into my grandfather's house. Somehow fell to me to keep the old man's mind off of things. We would play casino over an old card table. He never let me win. One time he put one of those tiny model trains into my hamburger. He was the practical joker. I broke my tooth. Friday evenings, we had fish at our house, every Friday. Not on religious grounds, but because Grandpa was a fish enthusiast. Keeps you from going blind, he would say. Even though the bones always got caught in his throat. My brother and I would sit next to one another, waiting for his terrible coughing to begin. Then one of us would be dispatched to the kitchen to get a flat heel of bread to clear the bones. He'd gulp it down, and slowly his coughing would diminish, and then everything would be quiet again, and we would go on with the meal as though nothing had happened. Friday, my parents went out, leaving my brother and I alone to serve ourselves and grandfather. Mom left the fish warming on the stove, breaded sole. Breadcrumbs only helped to conceal the bones. When the inevitable coughing began, my brother and I just sat and looked at each other, not moving. grandfather's eyes got wide. His face became contorted and red, his arms flailing about. I raced to the kitchen and back with flat-heeled pumpernickel. Grandfather reached out for it convulsively. But I handed it to my brother instead, and he back to me. Grandfather pitched face forward onto the dining room table and then back, knocking his chair over, pulling the tablecloth, silverware, mashed potatoes, fish, stewed tomatoes, peppers and onions, all of it on top of him. Heaped on the floor behind the table, he looked like the remains of some chaotic dinner party. My brother took the incriminating pumpernickel from my hand and stuck it into Grandpa's fingers. I think at that moment my brother and I became accomplices forever. Don't ever say a word about this, he said. Just go to bed and pretend that you're asleep. The next morning, my parents explained to me that Grandpa had gone away on business and had left me a very special kiss goodbye.
Thank you.
Matt, you there?
Yeah, sure.
What do you want, Matt?
All right. Real quick, don't want to take up too much of your time.
First of all, on the mountain, still got warm minds and consoles at my heart. What do you got?
He sailed away.
In the ministry, travel.
I think that what we should be doing when we go to Mars and explore Mars is that we should be going there with totally open minds and no preconceived theories whatsoever about the nature of life in the solar system. See, NASA accuses people who see artificial monuments on Mars of having a preconceived theory about aliens or whatever and of just selecting images that suit their theory. But NASA's doing exactly the same thing. It has a preconceived theory that we are the only intelligent life that's ever existed in the solar system. And its response to these intriguing structures on Mars from the beginning has been to dismiss them as tricks of light and shadow and as weird geology. And NASA may be right, and I say that very clearly in the book. They may be right, but they may also be wrong. This is one of the great scientific mysteries of our time. It is a testable hypothesis. And we need more data before we can make up our minds on this. For anybody to say, oh, goodness, I've lost interest in the face of Mars, on the face on Mars because of one photograph that NASA took in April 1998, that's too fast. That's too quick.
That shows a weak intellect and an incurious mind.
Sorry?
That shows a weak intellect and an incurious mind, such as exhibited weekly on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show by my co-host Chris, who jumped off the face on Mars bandwagon with both feet when he saw the one blurry, smudgy little picture in USA Today.
Yeah, see,
that's the lowest
enough,
form of journalism.
It's just not enough. We need more data. This is a fascinating mystery which really deserves an open-minded and intelligent inquiry. I'd like to give you an example about the recognition of artificial and natural monuments. I'm a scuba diver. And off the coast of a tiny Japanese island called Yonaguni, very close to Taiwan, at a depth of more than 70 feet underwater, there's an extraordinary structure, which I've done 18 dives to. It looks man-made. It has got very regular steps and angles cut into the side of it. It's a bit like a step pyramid, actually. 500 feet long at the base and nearly 65 feet high. Now, two senior geologists have studied this monument.
Okay.
One of them is Professor Masaki Kimura from Okinawa University, who's done 200 dives there with a team of researchers. They've published their work in Japanese academic peer-reviewed journals, and they have argued that it is definitely an artificial man-made structure. Now, this is very interesting, but being 70 feet underwater, that makes it...